Josh, can you hear us?
No, I'm not good yet.
Oh,
unfortunately.
I was like, can you hear us? No, I don't know about that. That's a very suspicious answer to the question, can you hear me? Welcome back to Zero Rights Reserved, a weekly podcast about nouns, NFTs, DAOs, Ethereum, and more, brought to you by the Noun Square Media Collective. I am your host, Tody Hawk, joined here by my co-host, none other than Mr. Joshua Fisher himself. Our podcast today is Nate Angel from Creative Commons, and I, for one, am pretty excited to jump in here, shoot the breeze about all things Zero Rights Reserved. See what I did there, Josh?
Yes,
it's love the it. It's the name of the podcast. Leo pointing at screen meme right now. Welcome, Nate. Super glad to have you here. We've had you on our Twitter spaces before, chatting a bit about Creative Commons, and it was such a great, engaging conversation. I thought it would be awesome to have you on the pod as well. Obviously, CC0, which is one of the licenses supported by Creative Commons, is super important to us at Nouns, and I'm sure it's very important to you as well. So I wanted to invite you on and chat about that. One thing we like to do on this podcast is to start out with the person and then get to the thing. So the thing is Creative Commons, and we're going to talk lots about that today. But let's start with you, Nate. How did you? What's your journey, and how did you end up at Creative Commons?
Well, it's a long story. It all started 1,000 years ago. No, I'm kidding. One thing to maybe know about me is I had a somewhat unconventional upbringing, and I won't belabor this, but I was actually raised on a hippie commune. And so I wasn't schooled very much in the beginning of my life, but then I went on to do lots of schooling, like too much schooling, and so I'm like overeducated.
So you like you backloaded your education? You like started off slow and
and then like did too much, like tried to catch up. Now I have an excess. But that's led me to maybe have a somewhat alternative view on things in life. I don't know that experience. But my career has mostly been working in education, a lot on educational technologies. Worked at places like museums and universities and startups and technology providers and open source projects and stuff like that. And along the way, one of the things that I got involved in was open educational resources, or what we call OER. And that's basically free textbooks. That's the easiest way to think about it. Like anybody who's been, well, I realize not everybody is an American or people from the United States, I like to call them. We need a good adjective for people from the United States that's different than American, because I don't
really
like
American.
American. I say gringo sometimes, but that sort of includes you Canadians. So anyway, but
does it? Oh, I didn't know that. Because our money is not green. Our money is like multicolored. So we should be.
You have very pretty money up there. That's not worth very much. No,
not
just
worth
kidding.
Very much, but it's very pretty.
I'm totally kidding.
We don't like any fiat here anyway, so we'll no discussion of fiat money around these personal objects.
Okay, that's right. I forgot we should be more respectful to where we are.
It's okay. I'm kidding.
Like in the United States, if you go to a university in the United States, you find out the surprise that, you have to buy like hundreds of dollars worth of books in order to go to, a semester of school as well, often, especially if you're in the sciences. Oh my God, they're really expensive. And so open educational resources is basically a movement to make free textbooks. So experts get together, collaborate to make actual textbooks, but then they openly license them using Creative Commons licenses, and then everybody can use them for free and modify them and improve on them and add to them and localize them, make them relevant to Canada or wherever they're using them. And so that's sort of how I got involved in Creative Commons, working on that kind of stuff. And it was sort of a community member engaged in that. And
because we talked about this on Twitter spaces as well, but how the publishers would like shuffle the chapters. I had that experience in college, university, where you would go and find the used book for like 1/10 of the cost, and the cost at retail might have been like $300 or something. And you'd find it for $30 at the local used bookstore, but all the chapters are jumbled, and sometimes even the points within the chapters, just so that you would never be able to follow along in class, which is kind of like a dick move on the part of the publisher, just to make sure that they're getting that max extraction every single year for the same information.
Yeah, and actually, you're so right that that's one of their earlier dick moves, but more recently, what they do now is they require everybody to have a digital subscription.
Of course, yeah.
And so you have to pay full price for that digital subscription, which might be less than the
They
book
must have
cost.
Got so excited when they realized they could do that. Like, wait a minute, we don't have to shuffle the chapters anymore.
Yeah, and we don't even have to print. We don't print the books anymore. I mean, they have like their costs went down, and their profits went up. At any rate, yeah, we could talk about that all day.
The president is Mr. Burns, right, of this publishing company?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm Mr. just picturing Burns. Like, hmm.
Yeah. I don't want to seem like an ogre, even though he is. But anyway, yeah, I love
the
Mr.
Simpsons,
Burns.
Not CC0. Just to be clear. So. Definitely
yeah,
sued.
And no. So like just over a year ago, a position opened up at Creative Commons to lead communications and community, which should probably be two jobs, but we're a small team. We only have about 20 people, and so I wear those two hats, and they both start with C.
That's why they put them in the same job. They're like, the meme was too good.
And alphabetically, it just worked, you know, like, oh, we can just cross these both off.
So all of your roles at Creative Commons have two C's in them, like every single one? Like CEO and cook, or like there's just...
Yep. Okay. Everybody is a CC. I like that. Nobody's brought that up before, but we're now going to make that a thing.
And you everybody also CC all of your emails to everybody in the organization every single time?
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
Actually, we don't even really use email so much anymore, which is awesome because I am not a big fan of email.
Whenever people talk about email.
It's better than faxing, right? Am I right?
All fax. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
You guys may be too young to have faxed. I don't know.
Oh, I've
faxed. You ever faxed anybody?
I've faxed. Okay. I think we both lived in the fax era, unfortunately. But yes. You know, there's still organizations, like there's still, well, you know, I guess, but there's still organizations that use them. Like some realtors still use them and a lot of lawyers use them. It's like, come on, man. Like you can sign it and send it by email. It's literally no different anyway.
Or you can pay DocuSign. You know, $40 a month for the privilege of signing it digitally. And
well, exactly. But they would be like, oh, well, you know, fax machine's more secure because we know it came directly from that number. It's like, oh, yeah, how hard would it be to fake a fax? You just have to put another piece of paper over top of it and put it through the machine.
Yeah, there's no way they'll get into our fax system. Impossible. Especially because they're just computers.
The North Koreans
anyway.
Don't have the technology.
No way.
All right. Okay. So we got a little on a tangent there, but that's how you ended up at Creative Commons. Very cool. Very cool origin story.
Yeah. And I've kind of lived in a bunch of different places. I was actually a Latin American studies person. And so spent a lot of time in Mexico, especially not just lying on the beach either.
I've been a Latin American studies researcher as well. Sometimes
like
in the winter.
Margaritas, you know. Yeah, right.
Joshua Fisher is actually a big comic book fan. So how do you rate Nate's origin story? Is it origin story or villain arc? What would you say?
Seems like an origin story, you know, at this point, doing good work for, you know, creative people and, you know, copyright. I don't know. Like, it's not technically copyright. I guess it is copyright law that you kind of work within, right? And finding more tools for creative people and maybe more importantly, the creative community to access the works that are being created and the information and resources that are available in the world.
Yeah, in fact, you're so right that it works within copyright because the Creative Commons licenses are actually kind of a hack on copyright. And CC0 is kind of a separate thing, so we should talk about that separately. But the rest of the Creative Commons licenses, they're only legally in force in situations where copyright is legally in force. So what you're doing when you apply a CC license, you are the copyright holder. You're the only person, the only entity that can apply a CC license is the rights holder. So the rights holder says, I have these rights and I would like to share them. And I'm going to do that by attaching this license to my work. And then nobody has to ask me permission anymore to use my work as long as they meet the terms of the license, you know, like by recognizing me as the author or whatever. And
it's like an FAQ kind of in a way for, you know, for licensing. It's like, you want to know what the license is? Just, you know, look at this license and it tells you.
It's like
a
handy shorthand of like, this is what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to share this way. You don't have to talk to me anymore. You don't have to email me and ask me if you can use it.
And please don't.
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely. You could fax me, though. It's okay. In fact, I include my fax number in all CC licenses. Josh was saying, you know, that, like, copyright has to be, well, you know, Creative Commons licenses are a play on copyright, and it's true because they're actually only enforced when copyright is enforced. And that's kind of an important point, because if you have some other right to use a part of a work, for instance, you can quote a work in, like, let's say you're writing an essay and you want to quote some other person's work in it, right? You can quote that. You might put a footnote in or whatever. That's perfectly acceptable. You don't have to ask for copyright permission to do that. That's like a fair use exception to copyright, right? Quoting somebody. Mm-hmm. And so, like, Creative Commons license wouldn't come into play there because copyright's not coming into play there. So you don't need to rely on a Creative Commons license in order to quote someone. You can already do that, right?
Right.
At least under most copyright law. Yeah. It's different in some countries, but whatever.
If you don't want to be quoted, don't talk.
Yeah, do not quote me.
Don't say that. You don't want to be
this
quoted.
This entire podcast is off the record.
Yeah, that's why we're publishing it.
Right.
Actually, off the record would be a good name for a podcast as well. It'd be pretty meta.
Somebody must have that. It must be by
journalism.
I was surprised.
ESPN,
I honestly was surprised.
Off the record.
Yeah, probably. I was surprised that Zero Rights Reserved wasn't taken, to be honest. When we were thinking about names for this podcast, and we had quite a few different ones, and I was pretty surprised that no one had already used Zero Rights Reserved. And it's kind of fun because we do actually release every episode of the podcast under CC0. So, you know, anyone can take it, remix it. Nobody's done so yet, but, you know, it's out there, so.
Well, that's the thing, is you don't know what's going to happen in the future, right? Like, somebody might be, you know, they might even base a superhero on, you know, Tony Hawk with those glasses and that hat. I mean, it could be cool.
Or on you, Nate, with that origin story.
That's right. True. Or they can mix it together and be like Nate's origin story with Tony Hawk's cool look.
Mm-hmm.
And Joshua Fisher as Echo Man. No, I'm just kidding. That's only the first.
Are you still getting echoes?
No.
Okay. He's just giving you crap.
Just messing with you. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the licenses. So well, actually, first, take a step back. Let's talk about what is Creative Commons for someone who's maybe heard the word used before, but they really don't know that there's an organization, that there's a series of licenses. Can you sort of give us the quick and dirty rundown on Creative Commons, the organization?
Sure. So it's a global nonprofit organization. And like I was saying, very small, like we're just about little over 20 people, but we have chapters in like 50 different countries, and we have like a global community of volunteers that do different things. We could talk more about that too. And we're not based anywhere. We're technically incorporated, I guess, in I think in Massachusetts, if I'm not mistaken. And but we have, you know, our team has kind of spread from the United States all the way over to various parts of Europe. We were formed about 20 years ago, back at the dawn of the internet. Well, not quite, but it was a pretty long time ago, actually, if you think about it. In internet years, 20 years is super long.
In NFT years, 20 years is like 300 years, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
I'll check the math, but...
Yeah, check the math on that, but it's like more than dog years for sure. yeah, so I believe the organization was formed in 2001, and the first version of the licenses were released in 2002. And it was really, at that point, they were realizing that the internet, like we were talking about with textbooks, you know, it gives the possibility to actually publish information and have people be able to access it at almost zero cost, right? Like, you could put up this podcast, and sure, it costs you a little bit of money to make it and host it and post it somewhere, but it's not very expensive compared to what it might have been before to produce a TV show, let's say. And you've got like worldwide distribution for almost zero cost. And in those kind of circumstances, you know, copyright is kind of a weird thing when the cost to produce and distribute something is almost zero, right? And so one of the things they wanted to do is they started to see people try to take this new thing of the internet and close it down and put paywalls around it and everything, was, okay, let's provide a mechanism for people who don't want to play that game and actually do want to share their work, like with, like, you know, effective legal, you know, tools underneath it. And that's when the Creative Commons licenses were created. And it was actually a hope that they would be temporary and that copyright law would change, but that's not what happened.
Was this like in conjunction with open source software movements and that type of like thought and idea around creating an open network for information sharing?
Yeah, for sure. It was very much you know, open source software licensing kind of came first, but Creative Commons licenses were definitely inspired by and modeled on that. And so you can think of them as sort of open source for content, open source licensing for content, right? So, and there's things about the li you can use open source software licenses for content, and some people do and have, but there's ways in which those licenses don't really map over to content very well. And the Creative Commons licenses are specifically designed to deal with copyright, whereas the software licenses often have to deal with patents and, you know, other kinds of intellectual property rules and you know, the ways in which software are different than content and blah, blah, blah.
Like those would be like the MIT licenses and those types of things?
New, MIT, you know, Apache, there's about 10 million of them. And that's one interesting thing, is that Creative Commons has really become almost this pretty much the standard open content license, whereas in the mm-hmm. software world, there's a bajillion licenses and people use different ones for different reasons. So it's right. kind of nice in the content world. You don't have to like decide like, oh, there's this complicated choice.
Well, not only that, but like these licenses are signals, right? As you mentioned earlier, it's a way that you can very easily communicate to the reader or the person who's digesting the content, what they can do with that content or if they can do anything with that content. And if you have a standard that everyone recognizes, then it accomplishes that goal. But if you have 50,000 different badges, then people are still going to be like, you know, what does this mean? All right. We
exactly,
just lost
yeah.
Josh. Did you lose Josh as well there?
Yeah. His video went off. That's part of his origin story. He's able to actually disappear and then reappear. Or that's a superpower, I guess. I don't.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. And before we cut off, we should actually visit my comic collection, because it's I only have one title, but I have all of them, and I'd be
oh,
interested
really?
To hear your take on it.
Okay.
What do you? Right. What is it? Nouns?
Yes, it's the Nouns. Oh God! You? How did you guess? It's
good
the
guess.
Nouns comic. Yeah.
Well, there's only does. One, so it's easy to have the whole collection.
So far.
Yeah,
right. One so far.
We have a six total comic.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, but
so wait, what's the comic that you have?
Oh, yeah, now he's all into the comic.
We'll forget to come back, and then we'll be like,
all right, I got to kneel down and grab it out of its spot here, but I'll hold it up for you so you can see. And you can tell me if this is cool or dumb.
Did you get these in an under the table deal?
Yeah, that's why I keep them under the table. And I actually have them in the requisite little plastic bags like you're supposed to. I don't know if you're going to be able to see that. But that is Howard the Duck, number one. It was later turned into probably the worst movie that's ever been made. I don't know if you had the misfortune
it's
to see Howard the Duck.
It's very, scary in not the right way.
Yeah, but they have...
They've got a lot of Howard the Duck cameos in Marvel movies.
Yeah, he's part of the Marvel Universe. And here's the last one, yeah. Number 31.
Nice.
So I have the complete collection right here, and that's my comic book claim to fame.
So why nice. Howard Very the cool. Duck? Why did you choose him?
Like, he's pretty weird, and I think I'm kind of old, and back in the day, like, he was so not, you know, even, I mean, a lot of the Marvel heroes are more interesting than the DC heroes were, at least, back in the day. But he's actually weirder and more interesting even than, like, Spider-Man or Daredevil or somebody like that.
What about Darkwing Duck? Comparable?
Darkwing Duck is probably the most interesting Disney duck.
Definitely.
Wait, is he Disney? I think
Darkwing,
he is, right?
He's Looney Tunes. So.
Oh, he's Looney Tunes.
Does this make this podcast non-CCO?
If
I show Darkwing Duck?
I love that you just happen to have a Darkwing Duck pin on demand. This is great.
Yeah, we should test him and see, like, you know, if we can stump him.
We should call this episode Copyright Strike This Podcast. And just see if we can get a copyright strike on YouTube. We'll try our darndest.
That would probably be trademark infringement if it were going to be anything. And I think you're probably okay, because we're talking about Darkwing Duck and you're just referring to it. You know, I don't think they come after you, but if they have lawyers and they don't like you.
And maybe better. if we put them in like a dark light or something, like if we like called Darkwing Duck a Nazi or something, maybe they'd come after us.
Well, I noticed he was holding an old school U.S. flag. It looked like.
I think
no,
he might be.
Cape.
Oh, that's his cape. His cape is an old school U.S. flag? Isn't that the...
It's just red.
Why does it have a circle of stars? Or is that his buttons?
That's his
buttons. Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. I completely misread that.
You heard
yeah,
it here
okay.
first. Darkwing Duck sided with the South.
No, not the flag. I mean the original U.S. one with the circle of stars.
Oh, the Betsy Ross. Wait.
Yeah, the Betsy
Ross. I'm Canadian, so forgive me if that's not correct. But
I know, like, keeping track of all the weird little flags that we have, like the one with the snake, don't tread on me. Like, it's confusing. I don't even understand, really.
Which I think they stole from Mexico, didn't they?
Probably. Well, they have a snake in their flag, for sure.
I think they had it first, yeah. Like, they had the snake in their emblem first, and then the U.S. was like, yoink. I like that.
Like we have done with most of Mexico.
like we did with most of Mexico's territory. All right, yeah. We've gotten firmly off track.
We took your flag.
Oh, yeah, so if we get back to copyright, right?
You want to talk about copyright?
I knew this podcast was going to be off the rails after some of our spaces with Nate, so it's okay.
Right.
We were prepared.
We'll try to bring him home. Joshua's going to bring us home.
So when you think about copyright, and you think about the history of copyright, right? From what I can tell, the earliest mentions of copyright are like somewhere around like even like 1500. So this is like this very old concept of how do you create an environment, a legal framework for creative people, researchers, and otherwise to be motivated to do this hard work of writing, right? And printing and all these things. And that argument seems to hold up, right? Like, why would I write songs and put them out there in the world as a profession if there's no protection for me? Or why would I spend all my time studying this subject if when I, you know, present the work, anyone can just take it and use it? Like, how do I, you know, monetize that and get, you know, rewarded for that work? And so, you know, the thing evolves from that time. But, you know, as we know, the copyright limits the sharing of information as well, right? So it does this like dual purpose in some ways. And then the people with the power and the money and the influence can obtain the copyrights. And I think history is probably filled with many stories of people who actually created the thing don't own or hold the rights to it anymore because someone more powerful or you know, more connected ends up obtaining the actual right to it. And so from there, we see like this evolution all the way up until like 2000s when the internet starts coming out and starts, and some ideas around, like you said, distribution start to change. And the idea of being able to share these things in this low cost way, and these like zero marginal costs of the internet start to change the dynamic. And so that's when Creative Commons starts, right? And so then when does the idea of CC0 start to come into play for Creative Commons?
Yeah, and it did come a little bit later. And so it's good that you bring it up as a separate thing. Like we promised we would talk about it separately. And so one thing that I want to go back to, one thing that you said, though, and that's like, why did copyright start in the first place, right? And it's really to do two things. One is what you were talking about, and that's the incentive to creators to create. And the idea was to give creators a temporary monopoly, if you will, over their works so that they could get some reward, right? Possibly money, hopefully money, for that work. And so that has that incentive part, but then there's also the part of copyright that is like, and yet knowledge and culture are things that all of humanity needs in order to advance, right? And so you think about science in this way, if every scientific, you know, idea was copyrighted or patented, and then you couldn't build on it without, you know, paying for it or getting permission or something, that would slow science down significantly.
Well, right? Many will argue that it has, right? Like if theoretically, if, you know, the DuPonts and the Monsantos of the world were publishing all of the work that they were doing, we would probably arguably be a lot further as a
to say nothing about the
community.
To say nothing about the pharmaceutical companies, like how much further ahead we would be. But I mean, that's why I brought up the patents, because I mean, patents are sort of there as a way to repay R&D, research and development, with a temporary monopoly. And so in a way, I guess, like these licenses, the copyright is a way of repaying creativity, I guess, with a similar monopoly on distribution.
Yeah, and this is actually perfect because this will lead us right to CC0. But so one of the weird differences, though, think about how hard it is to actually get a patent. Like, you have to file for it, you have to provide all this kind of documentation, it has to be like completely original, blah 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 blah, and you have often pay, you have to pay money to make it happen, right? Copyright, on the other hand, as soon as you fix a creative work in like tangible form, which can include the internet, which is weird because it's not really that tangible, but it is in some way.
It's more tangible with blockchain, but we'll get to that later. But anyway,
and we do have the Wayback Machine.
And we do have, although there's a court case right now that's putting the Internet Archive in danger. But
Yes, that's true.
And so hearts out to them right now. But you know, with copyright, basically, like, you put it out there and you get copyright automatically without even knowing about it. You don't have to file for anything or whatever. And again, it's different in different countries or whatever, but that's certainly true in the United States, and it's true in most jurisdictions.
That's according to the Berne Convention in the early 1900s, or that's the like when that came about, and that like kind of globalized copyright amongst a lot of the global nations.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the U.S. providing a lot of pressure to get other, you know, countries to recognize our copyright rules, so that, I mean, we don't love it when, you know, an entire marketplace, like, we'll just pick China at random, you know, an entire marketplace like China can basically, you know, reproduce Darkwing Duck comics without paying the original creators, right? That's
why. Wait, why do
market.
I feel like that wasn't a random example?
I don't know.
Well, they are some of the most well-known users of copyrighted material.
Proliferators.
Yes.
Proliferators of the work.
I like that word.
So to speak.
I like that word. I mean, proliferator. Maybe that should be a podcast. But yeah, and so the thing that happens with copyright, though, is you get it automatically on like that publication or fixation in tangible form. And then in the United States right now, it lasts for the life of the creator plus 70 years after your death. And that's number is because every time Mickey Mouse threatens to enter the public domain, Disney bribes a whole bunch of politicians to extend that time period. It was originally 20 years.
Copyright lasts for however long Mickey Mouse is protected.
Exactly.
For, basically.
That's okay. Pretty much it. But at any rate, and you know, some of the original, like the original Steamboat Willie animation, just reached the public domain status. And this is why we're going to get to CC0 here. This is the whole point. So what happens to a work after that, you know, temporary monopoly, which is now a pretty long time, right? Lifetime plus 70. Once that ends, the work enters what's called the public domain, which is then everybody gets to benefit from it, right? Sort of without restriction, if you will, because the creator supposedly got the reward in that lifetime plus 70-year period, and now everybody can take advantage of it. So that's the idea. So CC0 is actually not a license, because a license is when you give someone rights to your copyright. CC0 is to shove your work directly into the public domain immediately. So you're saying it's the fast track to the public domain. Exactly. So you as a creator or the rights holder are saying, I don't want to reserve rights for this. I want to push it into the public domain immediately. And there's actually, because copyright is automatic, there's you have to do that intentionally. There's no other way to do it. And so CC0 is the tool to put something in the public domain like immediately and intentionally. And that's, I think, and then we could talk about the connection to, you know, nouns and NFTs and why that might be interesting. And I think part of it is because, you know, the idea of blockchain and NFTs is that it's brought out the idea that the reward for the work can happen in a different way than through the intellectual property right holding of the work itself.
Yeah, in this space we like to sort of talk about that as being like the capture of provenance. So provenance is a word that we use a lot, where you kind of talked about how putting something on the internet is not very tangible. And so I think that's something that blockchain has tried to solve for, is like, how can we take digital goods and give them some tangibility, or in this case, provenance means like, when did something first appear on a blockchain verifiably? You can go back and see it and see that this was the first time now a noun was ever seen in the wild on the Ethereum blockchain, for example.
Right.
And so to your point, you know, that can, it's not proven out yet because it's probably too young, but I think the theory is, you know, maybe if you just let the IP go like Nouns has done and it becomes a super valuable global brand in 25 years, does that value accrue back to people who were involved early on and have provenance on the blockchain as having been involved early on? It's an interesting experiment.
Yeah. I admit I'm a bit of a crypto, more of a crypto skeptic and somewhat of an NFT skeptic, but I really
you
have
should be
enjoyed,
an everything skeptic. So
I'm
a,
and I am. I'm an everything skeptic, but I've really gotten to enjoy learning about the Nouns community because I think I love the attitude that y'all bring to what you're doing. So first of all, it's an experiment, right? And it's also to do interesting things. Like there's this sort of like mandate to be interesting, which I think is probably pretty cool just for creators in general. And then there's also
weird.
Keep it weird. Like in Portland, yeah. We also have that saying, keep Portland weird. And the other thing
is
the government.
Oh my God, I just realized that Nouns is the Portland of NFTs.
It is, totally. Wow. It's completely. And there's so many, if you've watched that show, Portlandia, you'll see the parallels. Yes, in Nounlandia, is there a place like that?
Nowntown.
Got it.
Nounlandia now. When
I like
Nounlandia. When show? When screenplay? All right.
But also your experiments in governance, right? I think that that's, and which I got to sort of witness a little bit firsthand to my chagrin.
Yeah,
but,
by the fire, yeah.
Yeah, as humans, we need to be experimenting with governance because I don't think our current systems of governance are working that well, frankly.
No.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see it all happen real time. In some ways, you know, I think Nouns, as you said, it's an experiment, and that was stated when it started, even, you know, on the homepage of the site, an experiment in identity and governance and treasury. And so, you know, it's interesting to like watch it all kind of play out quickly. And I also think it's when we think about CC0 and the proliferation of an idea how quickly can an idea become ubiquitous? And what does that mean for the creators of that idea? You know, in some ways, not that Walt Disney had any problems during his life, but, you know.
Well, not being famous, you know, at least. Yeah.
But all of that, like, it took, like Walt did, Disney is bigger than ever now. And, like, Walt didn't get to like, enjoy what it is now. And this thing, like, can something become globally relevant and ubiquitous, like faster, by allowing everyone to get involved in their own way? And will that drive value back to the original founders? And Nouns is certainly an interesting experiment and hopefully lays the groundwork for more experimentation from other creators and gives people, you know, some framework of like, yes, I want to do that. No, I don't want to do that.
And that's the thing about like Creative Commons licenses too. I think sometimes people are afraid of them because they're like, they think it's going to infect everything they do, right? You don't have to open every single piece of work you've ever made just because you open one, right? Mm-hmm. You can, people
yeah,
can do it as a-
don't be afraid to experiment. You know, we've seen that with Amber Vittoria is an artist that I really like. She does mostly NFT art, but also some physical art. And she recently just decided to release, you know, one piece as CC0 just as an experiment. And I think artists shouldn't be afraid to try different types of licensing and see what works. And they might be surprised by how well setting the licensing free can work for them as creators. Yeah.
Well, there's also some like very interesting nuance that I think about in terms of you can release, for instance, a character as CC0, but you can make a story that you own about that character. So, you know, you can't reverse CC0. You can't say like, oh, actually, I want to own it again. But you can find ways to integrate it into your creative process and into that thing to allow yourself to maybe have more fun or drive, you know, more audience to you and your artwork or your creative efforts. So,
and so can
watch it all play
so
out.
Can other people too, Joshua. So if you look at what they're doing with Nouns, a movie, you know, that's what they're doing with Nouns, a movie. They're taking, did you know about this, Nate, that there's a studio making, okay. So there's a studio that's been funded three times now to create, a pilot, and now they're working on the second sort of 10-minute increment of essentially a feature film, an animated feature film based on Noun's IP. But they've really definitely put their own spin on it. The look is very, gritty. It's very, Spider-Man Far From Home. It's got this gritty look to it. They've done their own thing with it. And to Joshua's point, they're creating their own IP using the CC0 assets, but what they're releasing isn't necessarily CC0. It has different licensing and what have you, but they're able to take that, those open assets, put their own spin on it, make their own story, like Josh said, and then they're still able to protect that if they want to.
And the question is, will that come back and in some way reward some of the original creators too? And at least in terms of the notoriety and fame of their works, arguably the movie release will make the Nouns who are in it more famous, right?
Well, that's the idea, right? I mean, that's what blockchain actually... Yeah, that's what blockchain sort of, I think, allows, because it already happens in the meat space all the time, where people will fall in love with this movie and then they'll start digging down the rabbit hole. Well, who was the person that created this character? Oh my God, he made a line of comic strips, 50 years ago, and then all of a sudden those comics become more valuable. And then they find out that, he wrote, an eighth grade essay about it,
A lot of people don't know that Spider-Man was actually originally invented by Karl Marx in one of his early... No, I'm kidding.
So
I just to say Karl Marx.
So Darkwing Duck is a Nazi and...
Oh, my days. So I think that, that's
really
something very interesting. When you say, when a creative work gains popularity, I think a lot of people do start to investigate where it came from and where it started and how it started. And that's one thing that I think is really interesting about this current environment with this publicly verifiable decentralized blockchain, is that it does become kind of easy to find that real truth, right? And it doesn't matter if somebody else says hey, I created that thing. It's well, no, it's very clear that here's the start of this thing, and it offshoots from there and it evolves from that point. So, I feel pretty strongly, about Nouns having a positive impact on, the careers of the artists who are involved, Gremlin and Tempers and E-Boy and 4156, and on the founders of the project, as, technologically sound and experimental people. And I think that all does drive value back. So I think it's a really important tool. Have you seen things in your experience where CC0 has been used outside of creative works? I know we've kind of talked about education. How are you seeing CC0 affect education and science research?
Yeah, well, I mean, we didn't even get into the whole science. We kind of touched on it briefly. But the science, if you get mad about textbooks, wait till you hear about science, because it's really a pretty wild ride.
I feel like that's a very niche call out. If you get mad about textbooks, just wait till you hear about science.
No, but there's an army.
Target demographic so well.
It's a very small army of nerds who actually, care about both of those things, thank God, because they're both important. But, a lot of times, research is funded often even by governments, right? So technically by taxpayers, right? So the U.S. government, for example, through organizations the National Institute of Health and, other scientific entities in the government, they fund a lot of the research that happens. And then that research often ends up getting locked up in proprietary publisher systems, and you have to pay to access it again. So we paid for it to happen, and then we have to pay to get access to it again. And like you were saying, I think, Joshua, does that slow science down? Probably does, because there's friction added, right?
And so that's the argument, right? Is does it slow it down or does it speed it up? Because would people invest in scientific research if it was all public domain? What would be my motivation to do that? I personally, based on where the world is now, think that there's plenty of people who would find that to be an important thing, and it's very hard to tell, but like if it was free, would there be actually more virtuous investigations and experimentation, and would there be funding coming from, different sources that might have, better results? Impossible to know, but I think maybe.
Also,
It's
first market advantage is also already a thing. So, I mean, with or without copyright protection, being the first person to come across a discovery and put it out into the market, I mean, you already have a de facto monopoly for as long as it takes anyone else to get their shit together and figure out how to do it next. So,
Well, one thing that
there's
we've
that.
seen happen time and time again is like someone spends a ton of time researching things, puts out their paper, and then like it's immediately debunked because now the global community is working on it. So the way I think about it, and I think that that happens like over and over and over again, we've seen that story play out where when you put the hive mind on a project, it seems to solve much quicker than trying to have, an isolated group of the greatest minds working on it.
Shots fired at room temperature semiconductors,
I was just
Charlie.
about to bring up room temperature semiconductors. Let's talk about a niche audience. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't
Okay,
make me.
how many times have you said that in a conversation? I was just about to bring up room temperature semiconductors.
Unfortunately, over the past few
Many.
weeks, like too many times, probably.
Sure.
But I mean, that's the case, right? Because, like in science, too, the provenance, to use your fancy French word, is it's a sparkling provenance that we were discussing before. That's like in science, that's important too. Like you get a lot of your worth as a scientist by being one of the first people to, that room temperature semiconductor situation arose because someone on the team, I think they were part of the team, although that's a little unclear too, published a preprint of their scientific findings, and that preprint was published with open licensing. Like that's to your point, Joshua, it's like that's how it got out, and then the hive mind started working on it, right? And if they had waited to go through the proprietary scientific publishing pathway, it would have taken years for that to get out. And it may have been debunked along the way or so. And I don't know that it's been fully debunked either. Like I've read different things about it. Basically, people are like, yeah, it's probably not exactly room temperature superconducting, but it's probably, another interesting development in materials science, whatever,
So it depends on the temperature of your room.
Yeah, exactly. Like right now, my room is so hot, so it probably wouldn't work at all. Now I feel left out that I don't have a set of, what are they called, nonicals?
Noggles.
Noggles, noggles.
Sorry, I
I
didn't mean to
kind of
disrupt
like
you.
I like nonicals though, now that you say it.
No, I got
From here, from this
Nonlandia.
point on, nonicles.
Okay. That's
Nonicles from the land of Nonlandia. I'm
yeah,
glad we're having this
exactly.
conversation, Nate.
Yeah, we're
All
going
the
to rename
lore in one
everything.
podcast. You were talking about how when creators create something, it immediately goes into, sorry, it doesn't immediately go into the public domain. It takes quite a long time, 70 years after their death. And I got to thinking, I wonder if that, like, I want to know if you, what you think, should it be that way, or should someone basically have to put it into the public domain forcibly by at some point releasing it CC0? In other words, should creating the thing really give you ownership over it and your kids' ownership of it and your kids' kids' ownership of it until someone makes the decision to set it free? And if not, why not?
I would say no, because I think, again, it's going back to that balance between the two things we were talking about at the beginning, right? It's the incentive part for creators, and it's also the fact that human creations need to be able to add to the sum total of human creativity, right? We need to be able to draw on things. And it's actually, this is why, for instance, you can't copyright an idea or even an artistic style, actually. Right, you can only copyright a fixed form of something, and so you
But you
can't
can
just
trademark a color, though.
trademark and patent are like their own little beasts over here, and I actually know a little bit less about them, so I'm not
Always
even going
blows
to
my
pretend.
mind, though, when you hear that stuff. It's like how Tiffany has like trademarked their color of blue. It's
Yeah,
like,
which like it's just
bitch,
a
that's in
series
the
of
spectrum. You
wavelengths.
can't.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I mean, human
Anyway.
history is filled with like radio wave licensing is like giving people monopolies over something that just happens in nature. At any rate, we could go on and on. But so my question is always like, how do we strike that balance between, giving somebody the incentive to create, like you mentioned, but also giving the rest of humanity the ability to benefit from and build on creations. And so like right now, like let's pretend for a minute that Copernicus discovered that, or at least was the person who, like promoted at best the idea that the Earth revolves around the sun instead of the other way around. And it's like sort of an important thing. And if nobody else could do any work from that idea without Copernicus's permission, that would slow things down a little bit. Even in art, right? Like depictions of how things work in the universe, right? And so I think it needs to strike a balance. And I don't think that balance would be better struck by making copyright infinite. I think it's too long already now, and I think it should be ratcheted back. In the original US Constitution, it was lifetime and 20 years. Maybe that was the right amount. I don't know. I don't know for sure, but like I think it's gone too far the other way now. And if you just look
Thank
how it
you.
plays out, it plays out like you guys were saying. It doesn't play out for the little man most of the time. Like we look at musical artists, right? Did Chuck Berry actually benefit from, his musical compositions as much as the record companies who ended up owning the intellectual property of Chuck Berry? I picked him sort of at random too. I don't even know the story for
Yeah,
sure.
it is quite complicated because I mean it is impossibly hard and extremely expensive to make anything popular.
Although
And
easier
so
now than it was, would you agree?
easier now, but also still like, if you spend a lifetime making creative works, chances are no one cares. Right. And so when something actually does work for you, how do you become paid for that thing? And then maybe on the other side of that is like, maybe art shouldn't be something you make money from. I don't know. Right. Like, is art something that should just be shared and looked at as like a common good for the world? Like, one thing I feel very confident about is whether or not you got paid to make art, people would be making art. And I don't know what that means, long term, if all art was just like a fun, free thing. In some ways I think it's actually kind of like sad for me to think that many, many people don't make art because they don't see it as like a career path. So I just won't, maybe in our American centric viewpoint, everything we do somehow has to lead to some sort of economic reward. And so we don't spend our time doing things that don't somehow, lead there a lot of times, I think. But yeah, it's very, very hard to know like what is the right balance to strike. So I love that, Creative Commons is providing this framework to alter the traditional copyright to allow for more flexibility and freedom for the creators, and also that you were able to develop this CC0 license and allow people to experiment with putting things directly into public domain. I think it's a really important step, and hopefully this technology, the blockchain technology, will continue to evolve how that works practically for creators.
And I think like nouns, CC0 is kind of an experiment too. We don't know exactly how it will play out. And maybe it will help restrike the balance like you're suggesting. And just so, this is like incredibly nerdy, but I'm required by my general counsel to say this. CC0 is actually not a license. It's what we call a dedication. The licenses are when you're licensing your copyright with the licenses. When you push it in the public domain, you're dedicating it to the public domain. Sort of like you're giving your house away to somebody. You're dedicating it, right?
What's the point of that nuance?
Well, it's just that you're not when you're licensing it, what you're saying is I still hold this intellectual property, but I'm giving you certain permissions, rights and permissions to use it also. So that's the license. Just it
So
would be
it's
the
no
same thing.
license, basically. It's
Yeah, it's
right.
giving up on all license. Like there's no more intellectual property. You're removing intellectual property from the equation for that work
Would you
when you
say that
CC0.
it's zero rights reserved? No, yes. I mean, would you actually say it? No.
Gee, if only there were a really cool podcast with a really cool host that was named Zero Rights Reserved, that would be awesome. Somebody should do that. Do you want to meet a special guest? I don't know if you like this kind of stuff.
Is it a canine or feline special guest?
This is a feline.
It's a feline.
This is
the internet loves cats.
Yeah.
Hey, William.
We could get him. Can you say Zero Rights Reserved? No? All right. Sorry.
Well, you know what they say on the internet, nobody knows you're a cat, right? So this entire podcast.
He doesn't even know he's a cat. He thinks he's like part of the family.
I'm people.
Nate, could you give us like a brief overview of like what a typical day in the life of a Creative Commons organization is like?
Well, I'll tell you right now, and here comes the plug. Right now, we're very focused on a big event that we're holding in Mexico City, October 3rd through 6th, which we call the Creative Commons Global Summit. So right now, you know, it's hard to say there's a typical day, but right now our typical days are just a lot of us are like really focused on making sure this event is going to be cool. And it is actually really cool that it's going to be in Mexico City, which is, I don't know if you guys have been to Mexico City, but it's a really interesting, fantastic city. One of the largest in the world, but really cool. And so, you know, a lot of what we're focused on now is trying to make sure that the most inclusive and diverse set of people can make it to that conference. Because like I said, we have a worldwide community, but it's not a worldwide community of rich people, right? And so not everybody has the ability to just like pick up and go to Mexico City whenever they want. And so a lot of what we're doing now is trying to make sure that voices can be heard and people could gather. And we haven't been able to have a global gathering like this since before the pandemic. So it's been years since we've been able to gather this way. And so we're kind of looking forward to getting together face to face. I don't know, do the nouns ever gather face to face?
Yeah.
There's been a few.
Cody Hawk was on a boat with some nouns recently.
That's right. Yeah. We got together at NFT NYC, some of us, and there was a meetup recently in Toronto as well. So it happens for sure. There's a nouns running club, which is pretty cool. Shout out Adrian. There's a worldwide group that gets together in different places and goes running together. So that's a cool little nounish get together.
Very nice.
I need to get on that nouns running club train.
I think. Me too. I got a real dad bod going on here. So I heard you had a baby. So.
Yep. That's why I have a dad bod. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Why? Blame the
baby.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no beer involved in my dad bod. That's
no.
For sure.
Still trying to shed that baby weight. Right.
Yeah.
So the Creative Commons organization is spending their time promoting these works, working on the framework for Creative Commons and CC0. And you're constantly, it's a nonprofit, is that correct?
Yep, nonprofit. And I didn't really give you a good answer before about a day in the life. So I'd say there's like two big aspects of what we do. One, which we were like, this is what we went to the nouns community for with that proposal, 349, wasn't it? You know, that kind of license and legal tools infrastructure. And that's what I think you were just gesturing toward. It's like both the law and technology continue to evolve and change. And so actually the licenses and tools like CC0, I can't even say it now. Although CC Nero sounds like an interesting thing too. I'm not sure what it would be.
That's what they had in Rome, actually.
Yes. They can play the violin. So awesome while it burns. But at any rate, so for example, like with the advent of artificial intelligence and large language models becoming so popular, we had to get that in too if we talked about room temperature semiconductors. Yeah. You know, that's like there's intellectual property issues both on the input side of artificial intelligence and on the output side, right? Like is there intellectual property in the outputs of artificial intelligence? And I don't want to open that whole Pandora's box right now. But, you know, so we've spent time like figuring out how CC licenses and tools work in a context with large language models, for example. The other thing that we do is basically like training and advocacy. So like we go back to that scientific, you know, the way that research dollars fund scientific research and then what happens to that research. So like we have a big project now called the Open Climate Campaign that was funded by a foundation to help governments and other research funding organizations require that any outputs from their funded research are openly licensed and the data is actually issued CC0 so that they can, so that other people can benefit from it, because climate is something that we need to address as quickly as possible. And we want to reduce the friction in climate science right now.
I think that's prescient, that when some of the brightest minds of our generation are trying to accelerate the research in a certain area, the way they do it is by setting the research free. And it flies in the face of everything that has been done in the past in terms of like protect, otherwise people won't do it. But maybe it turns out if people care enough about something and we open it up, then it's fun to collaborate on these things.
Well, and also the government is supposedly supposed to be for the public good, right? Like that's the reason we have governments, to do public good works. And so climate science research should probably be one of those things that we together pay for to make happen so we get it done and like solve this problem.
I have a bit of a hot take that the internet and the modern like era is proving that people aren't like, there's no like smart group of people, or like there's no like, these are the minds that need to be thinking about, and these are the only ones who can solve these problems. I think it's really showing that, you know, there's brilliant people all over the world who are capable of thinking about problems in unique and novel ways, and, you know, trying to gatekeep information because it's too early to let the world know, or only these educated few can think about these deep, you know, multifaceted issues. I do believe that that's getting kind of shown to just be not necessarily true in most cases, and that it does feel that by opening information and sharing and giving the information to the world all at once, you end up with the best results. And I understand that that's scary and that's new. And, you know, do you want, nuclear weapon technology science shared with the world? Like, I don't know what that result ends up. So, I see both sides of that argument, but I am excited for these tools to be applied more and more as time goes on. And hopefully it does, you know, not that we're not moving fast enough with innovation. Lots of things have changed. As you said, Nate, it wasn't so long ago that we were using fax machines. And now, like, you know, here we are all across the world talking on video.
By the way, this podcast will be going out on your favorite fax network. So just make sure you subscribe and you will receive
lots of paper.
Yeah, you will receive reams of a transcript of this podcast for free. Any fax machine in America.
Just send us your number.
Yeah,
you could fax a noun. You could fax a noun to everybody who calls in.
That's right. Every single person who downloads this podcast will be faxed a noun.
Oh, you heard it here first.
No provenance guaranteed.
Yeah.
No, I like that point, Joshua, because I think we talk a lot about big brains in this space, and there definitely are people who are super intelligent and thinking about things. But something we forget a lot is that we all have the same size brain in those noggins, and it's just a matter of like what you put into that brain. And so like that means like opportunities for knowledge all over the world, even though there's such disparate economic incentives in different areas of the world. The internet does, you know, is an unlock for that, because people could, if they have time, you know, watch an entire semester of MIT lectures for free in some cases. And the point is, like, education is kind of being, in a way, you know, freed and decentralized, and more people can become big brains if they're able to sort of, you know, fill those brains up basically with all this information.
Anytime you lock it down, I think, Joshua, like you're saying, when it gets locked down, it often gets locked down in ways that benefit the power structures that already exist. Mm-hmm. Right. So we look at intellectual property right now, like who benefits from it? The people with the money benefit from it.
Yeah, you had a tweet about this earlier today, Nate. I wanted to actually bring it up, so I'm glad that you touched on that. You were quoting someone, MMAS Nick, and you said, copyright was created from the beginning as a tool to protect the middlemen and gatekeepers, not the artists and creators themselves. So you just kind of mentioned that as well, but can you riff on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Mike Masnick, who I was quoting there, is he has been a longtime steward of a blog called Tech Dirt. You may have come across it. Writes a lot about legal issues, especially around copyright sometimes, but around technology in general. And really smart, big brain person, I guess. And I was just reading a post that he made a while ago, actually, on copyright. And going back to that balance question, right? You know, who is it for? Who is it benefiting? And so, like, you can talk about it theoretically. Does it incent people and so forth? And is that balance there? But if you just look at the facts on the ground, I think what Mike was saying there is pretty obvious. Like, the people that get the most money from the copyright regime that we live in now and the most reward and incentive for it are really big corporations who have teams of lawyers. And that's one of the other things about copyright. Like, it's not a criminal thing usually, right? It's something that you have to pursue your rights in court and pay for that pursuit yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Good luck. You have to have money to do that. Good luck. Yeah. It's hard and it's expensive. And so, like,
good luck proving somebody used your melody or something if you're an independent person going up against, you know,
UMG. Yeah.
No, you know, Tony, that's like a really interesting question. And Nate, it kind of comes back to what you were saying with AI of, like, how do we, you know, how does the technology and the licenses evolve together? Are Creative Commons thinking about smart contracts and ways to integrate into these smart contracts? Is that something that's on the roadmap and that's being discussed?
So I'll admit that, you know, y'all's use of CC0 took us a little bit by surprise. We weren't really, we weren't really involved in the, you know, beginnings of all that. And we just sort of watched it erupt, you know, with CC0 summers and things like that. And, you know, with the, when the NFT craze, I don't want to call it a craze, that makes it sound crazy.
Oh, it was a craze. 2021 was a craze. There's no doubt about it.
So, you know, we were sort of like, whoa, look at this, you know, boom. And, you know, a lot of people were using and talking about CC0 sort of without any, like, we hadn't been paying attention, frankly. So we're trying to pay a little bit more attention now. Like, that's why I'm here partially.
They were, you know, like, Dad, they're talking about you on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, whoa, the internet? You mean that series of tubes and whistles my gophers run? But to get back to the smart contract thing, like, I think this is an example of one of those situations where technology and practices have sort of, like, gone beyond what Creative Commons was thinking about when CC0 was first published, for example. And so we do need to think about it, and we have to consider what would happen there. And maybe there are adjustments that need to be made, because at the end, CC0 is a kind of legal, it's almost like a little contract that you're signing that says, I am giving up on my intellectual property rights and pushing this into the public domain, right? And so is that contract, the contract that CC0 represents, does it fit this new set of practices, for example? Much less whether, you know, the way that CC0 might come into play in a blockchain-based smart contract.
The good thing is that you can consider it and you can make changes. And so one of the biggest problems with things like, you know, the U.S. Constitution and other documents like it is that, you know, they may have a lot of great ideas, but again, like you said, they weren't written for 2023 and they could not have foreseen many of the things that we deal with.
They're pretty hard to change, too.
Exactly. That's what
you're trying to get an amendment passed, especially as a Canadian.
That's right. It's going to be even harder for me. Like, wait a minute.
When you think about these, you know, new technologies and these new problems and areas for investigation and all these things, like, how does Creative Commons, like, deal with that? Because, you know, I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, a lot of that fundraising effort that you guys are constantly doing is so that you can, you know, pay people to think about this stuff, and you can find people, you know, you can, you know, potentially hire more experts or consultants who are in the, you know, niche spaces that these things are starting to pop up and affect. So, you know, how does that fundraising go towards that research? Like, when you're fundraising, like, where does that go towards? Because I know, you know, we could talk a little bit about the nouns prop you came to Nouns and you asked for funding for the organization. In a way, it was like a blanket funding of like helping us run operations. And there was some feedback around, you know, why do they need this money? There's tons of money. They have tons of money at Creative Commons. And I think you made the point that, sure, there is money earmarked for specific things, but in terms of like running the actual organization and funding, you know, new research, how does that all kind of play out? And what is the importance there for people to understand, you know, how to support the organization?
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that, actually, because I think if we were to come back to the Nouns with another prop, we would really want to address this point head on, because I think that was a sticking point for some people who probably would have voted the other way if it had been answered well in advance, or it had been written into the prop itself, probably. And part of it is just, you know, nonprofit organizations are sort of their own beast, too. We talk about structures that exist or whatever. And one of the issues, like when Creative Commons was invented, unlike Nouns, we didn't build in a treasury mechanism. Like there was no, I wasn't there. A treasury mechanism wasn't built in. So there was no sort of like ongoing sustainability model that was there from the start. Like the licenses, we don't charge people to use the licenses. We don't get a cut of every time somebody uses something for free, because there's nothing to cut. And nor would we do that anyway, and we couldn't do it. So, you know, up until now, Creative Commons is basically subsisted entirely by the regular philanthropy. So foundations or people giving monetary gifts to do things. And in that world, if you've been in the nonprofit world, like foundations who give the most money only basically like to fund shiny new objects, what we call shiny new objects. So like a specific project to do something really specific. So like this global climate change campaign that we have, which is called the Open Climate Campaign, is an example. And I don't want to say it's a shiny new object like it's a bad thing. It's an incredibly important thing to do. But the reason a foundation was willing to do it is because it was a new thing that wasn't being done. Nobody else was doing it, and they think it's really important. And so they gave some $1 million that's actually has to last over several years. So it's not just like, it's not like, here's a big chunk of money, do whatever you want with it, right? It's like milestones have to be met. It extends over certain years, and it's to do that specific thing. Meanwhile, nobody is giving money to just fund the basic license and tools infrastructure. And so that's what we're actually, and it's not just Nouns. We're not just like expecting Nouns. Oh, okay. You guys should fund all of that, right? What we're saying is, for the organizations and communities who rely on the infrastructure that Creative Commons stewards, let's all chip in so we can make sure that that infrastructure is maintained. And it is sort of, it's almost like a bridge and roads kind of situation, right? If nobody's going to maintain CC0 and the licenses, then eventually they're going to crumble and not work as well, as we were just talking about.
They'll become like the U.S. Constitution.
Exactly. Oh my God, yeah. They'll get me started on what's going on there with the Supreme Court and whatnot.
By the way, I feel like I should be able to amend the U.S. Constitution, because I saw Hamilton on Broadway, so I thought that would...
That actually is all you need.
Yeah, I think there's a special clause that's like, if you see Hamilton, you have the right. I think there's a time limit, though.
You have to learn all the songs, too, I think.
If you watch it twice on Disney Plus, then you're good.
Right. But you have only until 70 years after death to make the amendment.
To learn all the songs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You also have to be able to sing all the songs.
Yeah. Awesome. Like we're almost hitting the 1 hour and 20 minute mark here. So I want to be cognizant of being over time with Nate. And I appreciate you taking
Well, we're going to cut a lot of this out, right?
Yeah, there's at least 15 good minutes here.
And it's all Nate.
That's not true. This has been a really good conversation. That's one thing that I've really enjoyed about connecting with y'all, the Nouns folks, is like, you are interesting, thoughtful people. And I think that the NFT craze, like people who dismiss it, didn't realize that there's interesting, thoughtful people involved.
Well, okay. Yeah. So I think that's an important point, which is that every time that there's a new technology, there's always going to be many different people that are attracted to it. And unfortunately, some of the first people that are often attracted to new technology are people who find ways to exploit other people using that technology. That's the same with every piece of technology throughout history. You look at like something like mobile phones or beepers, you know, who were the people who had those
or
first
the printing
drug
press or anything
or fax machines?
Exactly. All those people running fax machine scams in the early 80s.
Have you ever gotten faxed, ma'am? I mean, it exists.
That's true. That's
true. I got a noun just a couple minutes ago.
It said, please fax 30 ETH 20X.
But I do think, Tody, you know, you're totally right. It's like if somebody was like, well, you know, that whole like dollar thing, like I'm not messing with that. People do scams with money, so I'm definitely not messing with that. Or like, you know, that whole email thing, like I'm definitely getting involved with email because there's scams with email. So, you know, people are using it for nefarious purposes. Like that is, I think when you talk about something, you know, technology, or you talk about something that's popular, there is going to be that spectrum. But certainly I think the core of some of the communities, you know, particularly now, is mostly thoughtful people trying to do interesting things and you know, use technology and explore technology in a way that has an impact. And I found, you know, in this community of nouns and NFTs that most of the signal is like, be very careful, right? Like there's a reason why like do your own research and not financial advice is like, it became like a meme a little bit, but it is like, I think at the core of like the philosophy of like, don't do things that if you don't understand it, don't do it, especially if you're thinking about it from some sort of financialized perspective, right?
Like, well, look, it's like camping versus staying in a hotel, you know? So if you stay in a hotel, you don't really have to learn anything. You can just show up, give your credit card and have a nice stay. If you want to go camping, especially like backwoods camping, you probably want to just take a few extra precautions, learn what you're doing. Because when you're out there,
could take some water, for example.
Bring some water. Because when you're out there, nobody's going to help you, right? So that's kind of what it's like when you take sovereignty over your own finances with blockchain.
It's like camping.
You know, it's just like camping. We're going camping together. And you got to make sure you learn a couple things so that you don't, you know, die of thirst in the middle of the Badlands.
And to your point, the community, if you ask in the right places, will be more than happy to share information and help you, you know, get the right compass and get the right.
Go into any backpackers forum. They'll be happy to help you and teach you how to do it. It's not like that there's not help there. But the point is, you know, you are striking out on your own. You're not staying at the Holiday Inn. And so there's going to be risks there if you're not careful.
And there may be risks at the Holiday Inn too, but they're different.
Exactly. There could be. You might run into Pitbull. That's the biggest risk.
That actually sounds scarier than camping.
The dog exactly. or the singer?
The singer at the hotel, motel, Holiday Inn. You know, you could run into him.
I think I might actually like a couple Pitbull songs, so.
Oh, don't worry.
Is he canceled?
We'll cut that out in post.
No, okay. Mr. Worldwide can never cancel Mr. Worldwide.
You can't cancel them. Uncancelable. One thing that we've been doing at the end of these podcasts recently is we've been flipping the table on our guests and asking if you have any questions. Yeah, flip the table. Everybody flip the table one time. Do you have any questions for us? Like, is there anything you've been immersed in the nouns, like trial by fire. Do you have any questions about us? Yeah, we'd love to answer.
I do. And It's sort of a little bit tangential to nouns maybe, but I figure you guys are paying better attention than I am for sure. And so I just started tracking that there's this Open and Jack Butcher's work. Is that right? And I was kind of intrigued just because it seemed like even if you don't like all the work that's coming out of it, there's something intriguing, I thought, going on in the production of the work. And so, and it seemed both at the technological level, the community level, and actually the output, the works themselves. So three different ways, all three sides. And so I was just wondering if you guys had a take on that work.
Yeah, I love what Jack Butcher's been working on this year. He just keeps shipping things with his team of Jalil and Traff, and they're experimenting as well. They're keeping it weird, and I love that. So a brief sort of explanation of what he's doing with OPPen is essentially it was an open edition NFT that anyone could mint for very, very cheap. Might have even been free. I'll check, and I'll fact check myself on this podcast.
Can you fax me the details? Free or very, very cheap.
I'll fax you the details, make sure you're perfectly apprised of the price of what this open edition was. But either way, it was very, very cheap or almost free, and 16,000 were minted. Nobody really even knew what they were minting. It was just a fun open edition in January, February of this year. And then he kind of like like retro jerry-rigged it into an interesting experiment where it's almost like he owns a gallery, if you would think of it this way, a physical gallery, and there's all these open places that, that art can be displayed. And every 2 weeks, he invites another collaborator or artist to create something within the confines of what the Open Pen Edition looks like, which is kind of basically like a, you know, the Pepe meme?
Sure.
Do you know the Pepe meme? It's like a...
Unfortunately.
It's an internet meme that goes way back, and it's essentially a frog. So it's like a frog face, but very, very flat and very, very like interpretable. Right. And so many of these different artists have put different spins on it, different colorways, different ideas about how to interpret that. And then he'll release that as an addition. But instead of how it would normally be done, either in the real, you know, meat space art world, or even traditionally within NFTs, can you even say traditionally within NFTs?
Well, I think now you can, because it's not 2021.
That's right. But normally they would have just said, okay, here's the new group of editions, you know, mint them or buy them if you want them. But in this case, it's different because everyone already owns this open edition. So what you do is you opt in. If you like it, you go to his front end, you say, I'd like to opt in to the raffle. And, you know, 13,000 people will opt in or whatever. And only 200 of them will be lucky enough to reveal that art. So it's kind of like a really, he's turned it into kind of like an online art show, but on chain. It's been pretty interesting to watch. So there's been
from your perspective, would any of this be possible without CC0? Like the amount of collaboration and sharing and the way that meme has spread so quickly amongst, you know, at least the, you know, relatively smallish NFT and we'll call it, you know, crypto community. I think that's like another great example of CC0 being able to help spread this idea. And really, you know, Jack has become, you know, probably very financially and like emotionally rewarded from choosing to do that.
Yeah, and to be clear, like Jack's been grinding out art for years. You know, he's an artist that has been doing amazing work for years. So it's kind of one of those situations of like, you know, it took me 10 years to become famous overnight. There's definitely like the Jack Butcher story. So I'm really glad that he's getting his due, because he's a really brilliant thinker and a really creative artist. But to your point about CC0, I've said this a lot about OpenPen, especially into how it relates to the Nouns community. Both Nouns and OpenPen are great examples of CC0 plus lo-fi art. So art that can be really easily interpreted in many different artistic styles. So in the case of Nouns, it's pixel, right? So you see these little pixel animals or little pixel, you know, boxes and Nouns. And you can create something crazy from that, like what Nouns a Movie is doing. They're reinterpreting that into their own style. So that there's a little bit of a constraint, and then the licensing is open, and that like really, really helps to push creativity. And OpenPen is very similar. You've got this one, you know, open edition that looks like a frog head flattened, and you can do whatever you want with it. You could make it into this, you can make it into that. People have been using AI to reinterpret it. And
I've seen some really amazing pieces.
Yeah.
And you can see the original piece there sort of, but it's like wildly reinterpreted.
Yeah, especially the AI. Like I'm always blown away by some of this AI art, but some of the open pens that were done with AI using Nouns AI, shout out Nouns AI portal. Some of them, you like at first glance, you don't even notice that they're open pens. Like some of the AIs are really great at like being so subtle about incorporating the sort of the outline of what you're trying to incorporate into it. And it takes even the human eye a couple of seconds to be like, wait a minute. And if you didn't know what OpenPen is, you probably wouldn't see it at all, actually. So it's kind of like an if you know, you know type situation.
Yeah. Wait, I just realized Pepe is in the name.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't get that until you said it that time.
So it's like an open edition of Pepe. So it's an OPepe edition.
That's okay.
OPepin edition, yeah.
Anyways, got it.
The fact that they've had this much success despite the name being unpronounceable is actually quite amazing.
I'm going to start saying it a couple different ways now just for fun. Like
Opepepin, Opepepin, EpiPen.
Oh, EpiPen. Oh, wait. Am I having some sort of attack? Do I need an EpiPen?
Awesome. No, that's a great question. And I really appreciate you joining us, Nate. It's been an awesome conversation, and we'll fix it all in post.
As always, right?
That's right.
Thanks for having me. Any last words? Do we need to do any like sign-offs or anything, Tony?
You make it sound, you make it sound like you make it sound like we're going to kill the guest. As is tradition, we always kill the guest
at the end.
At the end of the podcast. Any final words, Nate, to your family, to your loved ones?
I mean, all I would say is like, I just really appreciate, you know, that y'all in your community are thinking about these things and working with them and doing this experimentation. And, you know, I welcome the idea that we might just do more stuff together in the future. There's already talk of maybe some kind of case study, which is just a horrible, boring name for something. We probably shouldn't do exactly that, but something that just helps people understand how Creative Commons and nouns or this world come together and like help people understand it more, because I've learned so much by getting involved with you guys and I feel richer for it. So thank you.
The feeling is mutual, and appreciate you joining us today. And thanks Joshua as well for getting through your technical difficulties to join as co-host today. It's been a good convo.
Yeah, I would love to be here, and thank you, Nate. And please extend our, you know, gratitude to the organization for the work that you guys are doing and the foundation that you're laying for creative people. And
we'll
others.
And to your cat also.
Oh, yes, William. Yes, he's obviously super enthused by this whole thing because he went away and went to sleep.
Yeah.
Amazing. Sounds right, like gentlemen. Sounds like our target demographic.
Thank you.
He's like, an hour and 30 minutes, I'm out of here.
Thanks, everybody.